This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture with me, Juliet Jacobs. And joining me today is Dashrin Johan. So we have a story for you today. It is, of course, the year-end holiday season now. And that can either be the most joyful or most stressful time of the year for a lot of people. But as more of us are feeling less festive cheer this year due to COVID-19's fallout, how can we cope with all of this increased stress and anxiety? So we're going to speak to a clinical psychologist for some practical tips to keep calm and carry on.
That's right. And we want to know what you think, so you can send us your thoughts by tweeting us at BFM Radio. Alternatively, you can also WhatsApp us 018-789-8899.
That's right. You know, if you were to do a quick internet search on holiday stress, you will find a whole host of recent articles on the topic. You know, many offering practical advice on surviving the year end and Christmas holidays. And, you know, what I'm thinking is, you know, that sheer number of articles is really quite a reflection of how big a problem holiday stress is for so many of us. You know, just in a normal year, in fact, holidays can be a bit stressful as it is. But when we add COVID-19 into that mix, it's a whole new ballgame.
That's right. And pandemic aside, there are a variety of reasons why the time leading up to the holiday season and the holidays themselves can cause anxiety. Many report feeling extreme stress come holiday time because of a lack of time or a lack of money, while others feel pressured by the need to give or get gifts.
Yes, and in addition to those factors that you just mentioned, you know, time, money and gift buying, some other reasons include family drama, stress involving their in-laws, broken relationships, or even, you know, very sadly, having suffered the loss of a loved one. And oftentimes, you know, all this coming together with family, those are triggers or reminders of who is not able to actually be then. You know, these are just the issues that were pre-pandemic.
Yeah. But as everyone says, we live in unprecedented times and everything is different this year. An article in the National Geographic caught our eye recently and the title was "Everything's Different This Year, So Why Not Holiday Stress?" Yeah, so according to the article, experts worry that the combination of the usual holiday stress and pandemic-related anxiety is a prescription for a very unhealthy holiday for both parents and children. So I imagine for many people, the holiday season will look a little different this year. Often, the last few months of the year are busy with parties and visiting family and friends or going on an annual family vacation. But as we know, things like traveling and gathering in large groups may not be possible or advised during this pandemic. So some other fallouts from the pandemic may include people dealing with more unforeseen expenses than usual, especially if they or their partner has lost a job, or if they had health issues, or if family members needed caring for, or even worse than that, you know, the family members have passed on.
Yeah, but as with most things this year, we are encouraged, of course, to look for silver linings and to make the best out of this really bad situation that we're all in. In that same article that we mentioned earlier from Nat Geo, psychologist Michi Fu, who is a professor at California's Allianz International University, said that if we acknowledge that this season has its own unique challenges and focus on the things that we can control, we can actually keep things from spiraling. And, you know, that article and Michi also cited a report from the American Psychological Association, which said that 67% of Americans feel their stress has increased over the course of the pandemic. And nearly 1 in 5 adults say their stress level is higher than it was at the same time last year. And I really think it's safe to assume that many Malaysians or, you know, anyone in this world, you know, is kind of feeling the same way too. I mean, I certainly am. I don't know about you, Dash.
Yeah, I mean, It's certainly, you know, one of those years where I think, especially heading into this period, right, you know, the stress is definitely increasing. And, you know, interestingly, many of the articles we read on this topic were also suggesting the same thing. Just admit it, you know, that admit it that this year is tough and don't be ashamed of the fact that you are anxious or stressed. That said, many also offered ways to cope with it in whatever way we can. So we wanted to get some professional advice on dealing with the challenges of the holiday season in the time of a pandemic, no less. So we have on the line now Dr. Joel Low, a clinical psychologist, to share some practical advice. Hello, Dr. Joel. Thanks for joining us. So the holidays and the end of the year are usually quite stressful for a lot of people. This year, with pandemic-related anxiety to add to all of it, it's possible the stress will be even worse. So what are the signs of stress that we should look out for in ourselves and in our loved ones?
I think one of the biggest ways to detect high levels of stress, I mean, obviously, you know, on our daily lives, there are some stresses like from work or from studies or from partners and things like that. So that's actually quite normal, right? I think it's uncommon if you're going to live a stress-free life, put it that way, right? But I think especially during this holiday periods amidst the COVID-19 situation, what we're looking out for is extreme levels of stress or unusually high levels of stress, right? And the best things to look out for usually is a change in the way we or other people function, right? So let's say, for example, you know that this particular cousin of yours, you know, when you guys have Christmas parties or gatherings and stuff like that, they're the life of the party, right? They make jokes, they keep the energy levels going up, you know, they really engage with everyone and all that kind of stuff, right? But all of a sudden, this time around, you see them and they're super quiet, they're disengaged, they're sitting in the corner, fiddling with their phones, for example. I think when you see such distinct changes in behaviors and daily practices in that sense, right? That's a really good sign that something's going on and slightly to be stressed. Same goes for you as well. If you realize or you hear comments that, hey, you know, you're not acting the same way or you seem a bit different, it probably is a good time for you to check in with yourself and see whether there's anything going on or not and see if there's something that's bugging you, for example. So that's one good way to check out to see whether you're stressed out or not.
But some people will say, you know, oh, stress is just part of life. But can you just remind us what stress does to a person's body and health?
Yeah. So stress is actually a good thing, right? By and large, it's something that keeps us alive and functioning and moving forward in that sense, right? If you look at it from an evolutionary perspective, stress is something good because it reminds us that there's something that needs to be done or there's something that needs to be reacted against, right? So if we go back to the caveman times when we had to survive, basically, you know, we see a wild animal, we see a tiger or a lion or whatever it is, then it's natural that our body gets stressed out and we need to react to it to make sure that we stay alive or we stay safe in that sense, right? And stress is that signal, that information that we get from our bodies, our perception that says, okay, we need to react, okay? Now, we go back to the caveman times, you know, when we're stressed out and let's say we see a lion or a tiger, that stress trigger will tell our bodies, okay, we need to prepare now. We need to either run away or fight that animal that's in front of us. And naturally, what's going to happen is that it triggers this whole cascade of biological reactions. Your heart starts beating a bit faster, you breathe a little bit quicker as well. Your hands and limbs all get tensed up because you're preparing to do some very strenuous physical activity and all that kind of good stuff, right? All those are stress symptoms, so to speak. Now, again, our caveman ancestors, at some point, they either run away or they kill the animal, right? Then that's it. The source of stress goes away and then we all go back down to normal and we're calm again. Fast forward to 2020, right? We can't kill COVID-19. We're trying, but it's hard to do.
Yes.
We can't run away from traffic jams. I mean, you can, for example, but you leave your car there, you'd be more stressed out and things like that, right?
Yeah.
So what happens is that your stress triggers maintain. They stay there for longer in that sense. So our bodies are in a perpetual state of preparedness, but there's nothing to do, right? That we mm-hmm. can't run away, we can't fight it. So what happens then is that you get muscle aches, you know, you get heart palpitations, you know, you have that rapid breathing that feels like you're going to faint sometimes, for example, and things like that, right? And the longer we are stressed out for and we don't do anything about it, the physical toll on our body can be quite bad in that sense.
And just going back to the article that we were discussing today, you know, by Nat Geo, they said that by acknowledging that this season has its own unique challenges and focusing on the things that you can control, all of us can keep things from spiraling. Would you agree that that's an important first step?
I think so, but I think as a precursor to that, I think the family also needs to be quite aware, right? Because it's one thing to be able to do something about a problem. It's another thing to be aware that there is a problem, right? For some, you know that saying that was going about at the start of the MCO, you know, everybody's in the same storm, but we're all in different boats. Some of us in sampan, some of us in yachts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So unless you are very cognizant about the fact that your family is not all the same, you know, they've got different people, different families, different units that are going through different things, right? It might mess around with our ability to be aware or realize that some of our family members might be struggling more than others and so on and so forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't realize, then it's hard for us to prepare for it. But once you do, which is great, and you can do that, it's fantastic, then yes, we want to look out for things that we can do to try and manage the situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if we know that there are people who are struggling, then, you know, we might want to keep the energy at levels a bit higher just to try and compensate for that, for example. Or if you know that it's to a point where it's quite difficult for them, then we want to mellow things things down a bit so that it's not more artificial, or we don't create this assumption or this expectation on them to try and be happy when they're not, in that sense, right?
Mm.
So once we realize what we can do, then we can prepare for it and make some active actions on it.
And just something I was wondering about, if we were to make COVID-19 the common enemy, would that be a good way to diffuse family tensions? We have something greater to fight here, instead of ourselves.
Yeah, that's a brilliant idea, right? So, again, going back a little bit in history, humans, we are naturally pack animals, it's the whole in-group, out-group kind of thing.
Mm.
And we typically find safety and comfort in numbers, in your own unit, right?
Mm.
So that's why through the ages, you've got people who band around things like football teams, right? The Arsenal fans versus Man U fans, for example. That's a big herd mentality thing going on there. Banana leaf rice restaurants, right? You like this restaurant better than the others, and it's an whole camp there, right?
Yes.
And there's a lot of positive benefits you can get from that, right?
Mm.
Similarly with the COVID situation, if you don't look at it from us against COVID kind of perspective, then it's going to be like, okay, you're struggling, I don't know why I'm not struggling, I might be better or worse or whatever it is, right? But when you have a common enemy, right, then the in-group, your family unit, for example, has a common thing that you guys can direct your negative energies against and also do something about, right?
Mm.
Then it's healthier for everybody in general, but from a sense of belonging, from a sense of family-ness, in that sense, it's really good, because then we have something that we can do to make things better, hopefully, right?
Yeah.
So that's a really good way to go about it.
Okay, maybe we can now talk about coping strategies. What are some practical things we can do to keep calm and carry on? So let's start with kids first. It's already been a tough year, and now's the time they usually get to go on holiday or meet up with extended family, for example. So what is your advice for helping children deal with their stress?
So I think for the younger kids, right? So we're talking about maybe 6 and 7 below, younger than that, right?
Yeah.
I think a really good way to help them manage the difficulties and the changes that are going on is to keep them busy, right? Mm. And I don't mean busy by distracted, giving them iPads and stuff like that, no. But busy in the sense that we try and engage them as much as we can with different kind of activities, right? Mm. So for example, even something as simple as a Christmas day, let's say, for example, a present treasure hunt, right? Something like that. Just engage them for half an hour to an hour. It's the varied activities that we can get them to do that's going to be very effective for them, because then they're able to get excited about different things, and that's key here, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think the last thing we want to do is to give them one monotonous activity for the whole day, like an iPad all day or watch the TV all day, for example. I think that's going to be more detrimental, right?
Mm-hmm.
So even if you can just put in little activities, 3 or 4 activities a day, for example, just something different, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that'd be very good for them, and it gives them, helps them burn off their energy as well, which is important, right?
Mm-hmm.
For the older kids, teenagers, the 18-year-old, 17, 16-year-old, that kind of thing, teenagers to teenagers age, that one's a bit more difficult, because by that age, they've formed concrete ideas about what they like, what they don't like. They're starting to learn how to be adults themselves and things like that. And that's why, that saying goes you go through the emo-nemo teenage years, right? That kind of thing.
Yes.
For that kind of age group, I think it's important for us to give them space, because they need their own ways to vent and experience their emotions and deal with their emotions, right?
Mm.
But on top of that, I think we also need to make ourselves available, right? Again, we don't want to be one of those helicopter parents where we just ask them incessantly every hour on the hour, are you okay? What's going on? Talk to me and things like that. We don't want to do that. But instead, we want to say, hey, you know what? It's a difficult situation. You're struggling. I'm struggling. This is a good place for you to also share a little bit about what you're going through as a parent and say, hey, this thing has really bogged me down. I can't see my friends. I can't go out, and I'm worried about you guys, and I'm stressed out as well. And I'm sure in your own way, you're going through a rough time as well. But if you ever want to speak to me, make yourself available, right? So you tell them, you can talk to me, you can call me, you can text me, however it is you feel comfortable speaking to me, right?
Yeah.
And that way, we allow the teenagers or the young adults to understand that my parents get me, sort of, kind of, even if they don't get exactly what I'm going through, and they understand the similar kind of emotional levels I'm going through, and I have a resource to speak to if I want to, right? So the ball's back in their court. And a lot of time with teenagers, they appreciate that, because you don't try and dictate what they should do, they decide for themselves what they can do.
I guess it's not all about solutions, is it? It's about kind of listening and being on the same page. And as parents, we need to realize that we don't need to fix everything. We just need to kind of be there for them.
Exactly. And if we can change our mentality to go to that direction, instead of trying to fix everything, we just try and understand the situation, right? It's good for both parties as well, right? So for the teenagers, for example, as parents, right, we don't know what kind of stresses they're going through and what kind of resources that they have. And the kind of solutions or recommendations that we have might be old school by their definition, right? Yeah. So if anything, we're just causing them more distress, right? So it's hard for them and they're saying, oh, I got to entertain my parents. They're so old, they're so traditional and all that kind of stuff. On the parent side, that's also really good because as parents, it's only natural that we want to try and save our kids, help our kids, make sure they're thriving and they don't suffer, right? Mm. And that adds such a high level of stress and expectations on parents that sometimes I think it's unreasonable because it's impossible, right? You can never totally save your kids, right? Or universally save your kids. You can never do that. So by taking a step back and trusting that you've taught your kid enough and then giving your kid enough experiences that they can survive on their own and saying, okay, if they need help, they'll come look for me, you take a lot of pressure off. And then it's so much easier for you to become a good, effective parent for your kids.
Okay, and just moving on from kids, we have older persons. A lot of us might be choosing to stay away from our elderly parents or other elderly family members and friends to keep them safe, and that might be tough on the elderly. So what can we do to help them through these tough times?
Yeah, I think the elderly especially, it's a bit harder, right? Because like with kids, teenagers, adults, you know, we've got so much to distract us. Even if we're not feeling good about it, we can't do anything about it. We have so much things that we can do to distract ourselves. When you look at the elderly, so we're talking about people in the 60s and 70s, right? Mm-hmm. Again, I'm generalizing here because there are a lot of very tech-savvy 60, 70-year-olds out there, I'm very sure, right? But for those who are not, then they look forward to this kind of celebrations, festivals, holidays, and things like that because they get to see family, right?
Yeah.
And for the more, I suppose, the OG generation, right? that's what they thrive on, right? Connection, meeting people. You know, like my grandparents last time, for example, their love language was food, right? So every time there's a Chinese New Year celebration or something like that, they'll cook up a storm and things.
Yeah.
And now we can't, right? Because not going to grandmom's house means we're trying to keep them safe and take care of them, which is hard for them, definitely.
Yeah.
So in this case, you know, I will recommend, you know, we try as much as we can. Of course, sometimes physically it's impossible, right? To engage them, right? So with phone calls, for example, if and when possible, instead of the whole family going to visit the grandmom, we go in spurts. So today is my family, tomorrow is my cousin's family, next day is someone else's family. So there's still that connection, but it's a controlled connection in that sense, right? And it might be a good idea for us to set up a system where they are able to set up like a FaceTime calls or WhatsApp calls or Skype calls or whatever it is, right? For them, right? So getting sharing together to get an iPad from grandmom, for example. So it's really simple. Just tap one button, don't touch anything else, right? In case the iPad explodes, you know, that's the worry. So at least that way they can have some connection with us, even though we can't be there with them physically, like in that sense, right?
Yeah.
So there's some things that we can do that to try and mitigate the problem. But again, it's not ideal, but we do the best that we can.
Yes, doing the best that we can. That's really the mantra for this year. And, you know, just as we're busy trying to keep everyone sane, how do we ensure we don't kill ourselves in the process?
Yeah, really good question. And I think super underrated as well, because not many people do it, right?
Yeah.
The easiest things to do are more behavioral or physical things, right? So that means things that you can get your hands on and you actually do for yourself, right? So in our field, we call them behavioral activities, right? So things that you go out and do. And we usually split them into two different categories. One of them is pleasurable activities. The other one is mastery activities, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason why we split them into two is because, you know, with pleasurable activities, for example, it makes a lot of sense. I like playing games. I've been a parent for about 5 to 6 years now. I never really had time to play games. So maybe during this stressful period and downtime, because there's not much Christmas celebrations, I can go and download a game on my phone or my computer and I can play a game for a little while. Again, within reason, you know, I don't become an 18-year-old and play all day again, like for example, right? But it's pleasurable. It's fun for me and I like to do that. And then I go ahead and do that. If you're a coffee connoisseur, for example, maybe it's a good time for you to break the bank just a little bit and get yourself some really nice beans and really enjoy the coffee that's your passion, for example, something pleasurable. But if you do that the whole time, only pleasurable activities, after a while, it becomes stale, right? Because as human beings, that's what happens. You know, we get excited about something for a little bit. And after a while, if we keep doing the same thing, it just flattens out, right?
Yeah.
A good analogy for that is like eating Pringles. You know, the first two bites you have, it's brilliant, it's amazing. Then after the 6, 7, 8 bites, it's like, nah. It's like just starch and salt, right? So we want to add in some mastery activities as well. So mastery activities are things that you can learn, for example, right? Mm. And we love learning things, you know. So if you're learning something new, for example, our brains are super engaged and we want to keep doing it because it's a sense of accomplishment as well. Because, oh, we're doing better, you know, I'm getting better at this. It's exciting. It's fun. I want to do more, right? So a good analogy I use pre-COVID, of course, when clients come in, I would tell them, if you can afford, go rock climbing, go mountain climbing, because when you rock climb, it's a mastery activity. You're learning something new. You're super engaged in the activity. So that means you don't have time to worry about your assignments or your mother-in-law or whatever it is that's stressing you up. And because it's something that really requires you to concentrate, if you don't, you're going to fall off. I mean, you're not going to hurt yourself, but you're going to have this falling sensation. Yeah. It's a really wonderful mastery activity for you to try and do, because it gives you that sense of distraction for that 20 minutes or half an hour, however long it is, right?
Yeah.
So self-care activities, these are the two simplest, most straightforward, and also the most effective ones, activities that are pleasurable to you, and also activities that you can master and learn something new from them.
All right, just one final question before we let you go, Dr. Joel. How can we aim to do to be better rather than bitter as we head into the new year?
I think it's a really good question, but it's so hard to answer because for all of us, what better looks like can be different, right?
Mm-hmm.
For some of us, better can be that, you know, we get a secure job for next year, which is a struggle for a lot of people. Better for some other people is to re-engage with family and friends because it's been a very trying time for people trying to connect to friends and family and things like that, right? So I think a good general rule or general advice I can get for us to be better is to, number one, not fight the situation. I think we need to learn to accept that this is our current reality and this is going to be a reality for a while more. You know? I think a lot of people are excited about the idea of the vaccines and all coming up, and they think that 2021 is going to be a fantastic flip of the switch and we're going to be back to normal
yeah.
again.
Yes.
But the reality, it's not. You know, we have evidence right now that the vaccine is not as effective or as useful as we hoped it would be, at least not so soon anyway, right?
Mm.
So accepting the situation for what it is now and not staying in the holding pattern and waiting for things to change, I think that's going to be really powerful. Because once we accept, then we can rebuild our short-term future around this new reality in that sense, right? Instead of just holding on. And the second one I think I would advise for us to be better is to just start doing things, right? So there's a lot of things that we've held back because we're worried or because we're bogged down by the stress and anxiety of the COVID situation and things like that, right? And because of that, you know, we hear a lot of stories about dreams or plans for 2020 that have just gone down the chute, right? So if and when available, of course, some people, they want to travel for work and holidays. That's a bit harder, right? But whatever it is that you can do, that you've always wanted to do, but you held back because of what's going on, start doing that, right? Because that's going to give you a lot of sense of accomplishment, moves you forward, you don't stay in one spot the whole time. I think the third and final piece of recommendation and give is just to find things in life that you can be thankful for. Right? I think sometimes that's something that's a bit underrated, right? But super, super important, especially right now. There's so much bad news. You know, you open the papers, you turn on your phone, there's on Twitter, on Facebook, whatever it is, right? There's always some bad news to be heard and to be seen. I think there's no need for us to look for more bad news, right?
Yeah.
But if we refocus our energies and try and find for things that we can be thankful for, grateful for, you know, for example, my family is alive and well and everyone's healthy, great. Moving to 2021, I've got a job that I can thrive in and I can do well in. Fantastic. You know, a new bag of coffee beans even that's coming along the way. Great. You know, the new season of your favorite show is coming up. Fantastic. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Look forward to the things that we can look forward to. I think that's a really good way to give us a boost as well. So those are the three things I would suggest.
All right. Thanks so much, Dr. Joel. That was Dr. Joel Low, a clinical psychologist, sharing some really useful tips on dealing with the holiday stress. And I think that felt almost like a personal therapy right. session for me. So I really appreciated that. Do you get stressed, Dash, you know, during the holiday season or, you know, during times of your festivals or anything like that?
Honestly, I think when it comes to these holiday seasons or, you know, preparing for festivals and all, there are always these two groups of people, right? The ones that are actually doing work and planning everything. They are the ones that feel all the stress. My mom, you know, parents, uncles and aunties. And then me and my cousins, we are kind of the foot soldiers and lepak crew. So we are just hanging around, and if they tell us to do this and that, we will do. So generally, I don't feel stressed during holiday or festive period. But I'm imagining it's very different for you.
It is. It's especially when you've got kids, it's hard, right? Mm. And I guess even before, you know, with like family and everything, even before the kids came along, I would feel that stress, like what we've been discussing, you know, I need to get these presents, but oh my God, I don't have money, but I need to get something nice. And I finally came to the conclusion a few years ago that, I mean, none of my friends are asking for gifts. None of them expect anything. And the kids just really want you to be there. So I've stopped doing all of that. I've stopped stressing myself out. I've stopped like, okay, I must get these gifts by this time. I'll just tell a friend, if I haven't got you something now, I'm going to take you out for dinner at another time, or, you know, we'll do these drinks. We'll have, you know, we'll have a cup of coffee somewhere, you know. So, and thankfully I've got good friends who understand that and know the kind of pressures that I'm going through. So, you know, we worked it out and it's been so much better, you know, celebrating Christmas these last few years.
Yeah, I think in this regard, right, when it comes to gift giving and all, I think the people who are giving the gift always put sort of unnecessary pressure on ourselves.
Yeah.
Whereas like our close friends and family, they are just like, you know, as long as you come for the event, we are happy. Or yeah, anytime you want to give me something, it doesn't really matter. The friendship and all is more than just those gifts, right? But I think because we care about the people so much, especially if it's people we are close to, we like know what they like, you know, are they going to like this and that? Yeah. And I think we make ourselves more stressed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I mean, with my siblings and I, we've just made an agreement. Okay, no more gifts for each other. Let's not stress each other out. We'll just get stuff for the kids, and the kids love anything. So it's not really hard. But I guess, you know, for me also, I need to help like the little ones, you know, cope with all the changes. You know, we're not allowed to go visiting. We can't go traveling, all those things. So that's been an interesting challenge. And, you know, like all the, like everyone's been saying, like, you know, just focus on the good things and remember that the good stuff that you have. And that's what I'm trying to impart to like both the elderly and the young ones in my family, you know, like just remember that we're all together.
Yeah, I think that's the similar kind of thing. So I don't have to deal much with little ones, but older people definitely, especially grandparents and all. I always go back to, you know, like this year, Deepavali was, you know, away and all, you know, celebrating through video calls and things like that. It's always more difficult, I feel. Whereas for me, although like, you know, it's sad that I can't go back and I can't see my family, I feel like I'm like I can deal with it. Whereas when, you know, when it comes to grandparents and all, they really feel it because, you know, they haven't seen you in a while and all, and they start missing you and they feel sad and stressed about it. So I guess what we can do is just to, you know, talk to them as much as we can. You know, if previously when I always like think about it, like, you know, previously when I was visiting them, at least a little bit more than this year. Sometimes when, you know, when you don't call and all, it's you still should, but it's not that big of a deal. Whereas this year, especially during like festive periods and all, I think it's very important to call them, you know, video call. I think these small gestures will make them feel so much better.
Yeah, definitely. Because it's been a tough year, like you said, right? With so much less contact with each other.
Yeah.
And even their daily routines have been upended, right? So, I mean, they must be feeling very lonely as well. So I guess, you know, like you and Dr. Joel said, just make sure they have the iPad or whatever, you know, gadgets and devices, and just make sure they're connected to you guys.
Yeah. And overall, I think we have to remember that at its core, this is a season for giving and for giving thanks. So the more we focus on that, the less we worry about and we, you know, less we worry about and what we cannot buy or we cannot see, and the more generous we feel towards others, which I think makes everyone happy.
Definitely. Well, we hope that, you know, everyone is not getting stressed out this season. And if you are, well, you know, just let things go. Just do that. If you have any thoughts that you'd like to share with us, you can always tweet us at BFM Radio, or you can send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899. You can also contact the team. Just look us up on Facebook, search for BFM The Bigger Picture, and you can drop us a message there. But I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today's show. If you miss any part of it, you can always download the podcast at bfm.my/dailydigest. You can find it on the BFM app, on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, and also on Google Podcasts. But do stay tuned. Coming up at 3 p.m., it's Front Row with Sharmila Ganesan, and she'll be speaking to Tintoy Chuo, who is the founder of Fusion Wayang Kulit, and they're going to be discussing how the troupe are answering questions related to their work through a YouTube series called Puppet Explained. So that's coming up after the 3 p.m. news. This has been The Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.